What is up, guys? Welcome to episode two. We made it. We made it to episode two here of Deciphering Dynasty. We're Leo Pasiga, a one-time senior writer, podcast host for DLF, and FSWA finalist. We answer your questions live, break down dynasty theories. Had a lot of fun with this last. If you missed our last episode, we kind of talked about really in-game theories and talked about kind of how you should go about building teams and what does it look like. Just ideas of just being a dynasty manager. So tonight we wanted to do is Leo's smarter than me, and he knows how to do all these things. So he built a variant spreadsheet. It's really great. We're going to show it to you right now. excuse me. And so we're going to talk about variants and how you build these kind of rankings, but also how to apply that to trades. Because I will say this, the number one thing I think most dynasty managers struggle with is trades. If it's no matter what format it is, if it's Devy, Dynasty, if it's whatever college players involved, it's really hard to value trades because everybody values differently in the nucleus of your league. So we're going to be diving into that. This is the crazy sheet that they did. You can look at it, and if you want it, I could share it with you too. And just talk about the variant spreadsheet of what this is and then why you did this. So what the heck is this, Leo? What are we looking at?
So there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of folks, a lot of content creators that do something similar to this. Mm-hmm. Rich Dynasty Island does one. I've seen him post it on, you know, Twitter a few times. The guys at JWB, they do something similar to this. What I do is I like to add layers of context, right? We talked about that the first show, that's really where I steer everything. Mm-hmm. Right or wrong, good or bad, I tend to add layers of context just because it makes things clearer. And you're right. So trading is generally the number one thing that folks interact with me about, get it, hop into the DMs about. And it's not just player values. It's how do you craft a trade? You know, what lens are you applying in order to get this done? We talked last week a little bit about rankings and evaluating players. And if you have a rebuilding team versus a title chasing team, that's different. They're not the same thing. And that's the whole point with this. So the whole idea behind this is to give you targets. And let me say first off that this is much easier to maintain during the off season than it is in season. Yeah. Because any type of rankings in season change, you know, minute to minute, basically, based on the most recent performance, recency bias. What does it look like? Who's the upcoming schedule for the next four games? It all factors in. So off season's a lot easier to do this. But basically what this comes down to, and I asked the listeners or anybody following along, don't get hung up on the rankings. I threw this together really quick. I didn't put a lot of energy or effort into differentiating between the 13th and 14th wide receiver. What I wanted to do was build an example that would show you exactly how to work through this so you have an idea. So basically what it comes down to is I've listed, I don't know, the top 25 or top 20 wide receivers here. I've got their age in the first column. Then we go to a vacuum rank. And a vacuum rank is just basically no context involved. What do I, you know, based on age, based on dynasty, based on the offense they're in right now, what's the vacuum rank? Then I think that you add layers of context. So then we have a rebuild rank, how they would be ranked if you were on a squad that was still 2 years away from really chasing a title. And then you've got a column for title chasing so that if you're ready to compete right here, right now, and I think the biggest outlier in that is probably Tyreek Hill. I think in a vacuum, I have him ranked 9, rebuilding 11, chasing a title, I have him 3rd. And again, that difference is there to just to show the variance in the context that you would have what your goals are for the upcoming season. Then again, there's plenty of sites that you can get rankings from. It's whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, I know a lot of folks use Keep Trade Cut, but that is such a volatile ranking system that I don't generally go with that. I like to go with a little bit more established rankings for the spreadsheet. So I just grab DLF and I grab Football Guys where they currently rank right now. And then what I did was I grabbed the January startup ADP off of the DLF site. And I put that into 3 columns and I count the ADP twice because that's the current look, the current worth mm-hmm. that they're going for in startups. So I like to count that twice. So now I've got 4 rankings that I'm counting on to kind of get a consensus. I've got DLF, Football Guys, I'm counting ADP twice. So I'm dividing by 4 and I'm getting what the consensus is on value. Okay. And I compare that to the three columns I did earlier, right? Vacuum, rebuilding, title. And I look for the variance. And anything to me that's more than two, a quantity of two off, plus or minus, becomes a possible target for a trade. Okay. In a vacuum, if I'm rebuilding, or if I'm chasing a title. And they're not always the same, again, based on what my goals are for 2 years right now. Yeah. Whatever that layer of context is, changes who my potential targets are. And that helps me have a blueprint, right? We talked last week about having a blueprint. What are your goals? What's your strategy? What are you trying to apply? Are you tracking it? Are you seeing if you're successful? Well, now you have a roadmap for potential targets. And now your bias can come into this a little bit more, right? Is there one particular player out of the, you know, out of the ones that you've differentiated that really stands out? And we can get into that a little bit more when you start applying league specifics to this spreadsheet. But in general, that's what this is really all about. It's all about setting up a strategy, setting up a blueprint, giving you targets so that you're not just looking, going through each roster randomly, looking for that perfect trade. Now you've got a blueprint.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic in a way that it gives you, because I think a lot of times, like, oh, I want to go buy this player, but you don't have a picture of it, right? We do dynasty buys and sells. I do them here, but we don't have like a blueprint for what's coming next. All right, if I am a title contending team, what is that variance based on actual ADP that's out there already that people are drafting at? Because we know that people look at that ADP. Like, I think this is fantastic. Obviously, you're going to talk about kind of, you know, how you build it, or just in general, like why you do it. I'm going to segue a little bit. There is a player that I was surprised about. So I'm going to give you this player. You got to tell me like what you think of it too. So Devonta Smith, it's interesting that like where his value at, according to variance, like it's interesting that he's negative on every variance there. Did you notice that when you were doing it? Did you see that? Because I did too. Because Devonta, to me, I think a lot of people expect him just to be the wide receiver one. AJ Brown's kind of declining. Maybe you go buy him and you're going to get those areas. But maybe this chart isn't telling us that.
Right. So I do think that, again, the ranking that I gave him, putting him in at 14. I don't know. Some folks may have him higher, you know, my vacuum rank. If you look at DLF going across, I mean, DLF has him at 11.
Yeah.
And Football Guys has him 11, and January ADP was 10. So I have him ranked lower just in, you know, my personal rankings, which is what's offsetting making him a sell more than a buy. Yeah. Simply because of where I have him ranked. So again, for me, that would be a person, if I have him rostered, I'm looking to make that move because the consensus is that I probably will get more for him than I have him valued at.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and I think we talked a little bit about this on the podcast that we guested on earlier this week, when you're talking about wide receiver 8 to wide receiver 22, there is such a sliver of differentiating value or variance that you can pull 30 people and you're going to have 30 different rankings from 8 to 22, just because, you know, one or two guys are just going to be different because they're so close.
And I think too, to your point, and I know we went on a different show together and we talked about this, but if I have them in these tiers, so like you set up your rankings, everybody can see it on the screen, kind of how they're set up there. You know, I am not against, like, so Devonta to me is in the same tier as, you know, who else? Like, you know, you could go T. Higgins if you want. You could talk about Tank Dell. If I can get, like, if I have Devonta and he's getting valued at a couple big time sites where I know people are going to be looking at DLF rankings, they're going to look at Football Guys rankings because these are the big sites out there. If I can use that and tier down a little bit and get other assets, but they're still in the same tier for me, I'll do that. So the way I look at it is like, if I'm going to move down from Devonta to the Tank Dell, but I get a second back, I'll do that all day. Like, I'm okay with doing that. But that's me more tier based how I do that. I stole that from Dave Wright. He's a very smart guy, works for DLF, and he's just an all around good guy. And he talks about that all the time. He did. And especially when he was doing this a lot more, which he should still do because he's a really smart guy. And he talked about always like tiering down or up, but always getting those added seconds where your tiers are at. But I do like the sheet in terms of, hey, you know, I know where my ranks are at. Okay, let me build out, you know, see where other people's ranks are at. And it just allows me to accumulate value. I mean, there's some very good values out here, and you can really see it. Like Debo, if you're chasing a title, I mean, that's a guy to go after because he is definitely getting valued. He just went in the eighth round of a startup that I'm in, or seventh round, like wide receiver 37 or 8 or something like that. I mean, that is floor price almost for Debo right now if you're a title chaser. So I love this sheet, and you can do this for every position. Right. And I think that is the awesome thing about this is, like, as you build it out, and this is something I want to do, I'm going to do for our Patreon at some point. You're going to have to help me and teach me how to do this. But this is how I want to kind of build out rankings from now, because I think blanket rankings don't tell us anything, really. Like, you should have tiers for sure. But I think it's really hard to kind of gauge, like, where is the community at with these guys so that you can go out there and kind of extract that a little bit. I know you wanted to, did you want to talk about how to create this? Or, I mean, you kind of already kind of did, but yep. Or wherever you want to go next with it.
Yeah. So it all depends on your skill level with Excel, really. I mean, This was very basic. I didn't put, like, so if I were still playing regularly in 5 or 6 dynasty leagues and I wanted to build this out, I would build macros into it so that I could drop in, I could copy and paste new rankings and have the spreadsheet just update automatically instead of having to do the math. This is, again, very, very basic. I just made the columns. I went in and again, I didn't give it a ton of thought, but I just did the vacuum rank. Okay, if I was rebuilding, how would I rank them? If I was title chasing, how would I rank them? Then went and got the information from DLF, from Football Guys.
Yeah.
Pulled up DLF, got the ADP, just plugged it in one column at a time. And then I just did the math, right? I just went across and said, okay, here's the consensus. And here's the difference between my three columns. And now go ahead and highlight the color. Again, you can build a macro to highlight any, you know, whatever colors you want for any variant that you want, whether you want it at a difference of 1, a difference of 3, a difference of 5, color it certain colors. You can build all that into the background. And I know there's a lot of Excel wizards out there that play this game that could make this much better than what I've done. But I wanted to build it very bare bones, just so that, you know, anybody could do it. You know, just, again, it's easier now because this probably took me, you know, an hour and a half to put together, but it was once, now that it's built, I can just, you know, tweak it much easier in the off season than once it's live and we're changing values on a weekly basis. And plus, the off season, I think, is where you have your biggest window to chase variants. I think once the season starts, you can chase injuries. You can chase, there's different agitating factors that cause you to make trades in season. I think off season is when you really take advantage of a difference in rankings. I think it's, what did you call it the other day? It's redraft plus once you get into in season. I mean, that's very true. Yeah. And so the tools you use to take advantage of the off season are really different than the skills and the tools that you use to take care of dynasty in season.
I think that's a good point. I don't think a lot of people bring that up. I think you have to have different mindsets at every point of a season. Like, it's almost in a micromac managing in season too. First 8 weeks are totally different than the next 8 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is, because you're looking at contender status, you're looking at rebuild, you're looking at all that. I want to point out too, for those of you watching, and I appreciate you guys watching, we're going to get to trades later. So if you want to drop some trades in the comments while you're watching, we will get to them like we always do at the end of the show. But I do want to also point out, when we're thinking of, like, you know, in the off season, because I get a lot of questions. I get probably 50 to 100 DMs asking trades. Like, I love them. You can keep DMing me, but the biggest thing that I see is like, hey, I need a running back. Hey, it's February 1st. You don't need a running back. I'm going to tell you that right now. You don't need this position right now. All you need is to collect value. Like, you don't need to fill anything now. Like, you don't need a running back till August. I'm going to tell you that right now. Like, you don't want to go buy that position. So I get a lot of questions like that. My first response always is like, you don't need anything right now. Like, you don't. Like, unless you absolutely, like, the quarterback super flex, you're like, oh my gosh, I need him. Like, there's some outliers to that. But don't be trying to fill your rosters right now. Like, and that's what this variance will allow you to do. You could see kind of like, maybe, hey, I see that there's a discrepancy between my rankings or guys that I really like. I'm going to go kind of attack that. And I think it's important to remember that you don't, you're not building anything in terms of like you're filling holes right now. You don't have any holes. Just go out there and collect value, because then you can use that value later, especially when you think of like, you know, vacuum variants and those type of things. And in August, this is going to look completely different as you plug these things in, as we get free agency, the draft and all of that, and you can still extract value for your teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that I'll mention as we're talking about not having needs right now, I think the point that you brought up on the show earlier this week that we did and tonight about being able to tear down for, you know, an added second or an added, I think is fantastic advice. And I think it's absolutely a smart blueprint, smart strategy. The other thing and that I mentioned earlier, and I think is crucial when you're talking about not trading for need now, but eyeing the players that are sardine insulated. And when I brought that up on Tuesday, it got a chuckle from everybody because what the hell is sardine insulated and what does it have to do with fantasy football? Fantasy football, I mean, we are driven by groupthink. We just are. And we'll have some folks that go against the grain, but whenever a large website gets on a player, yes, whenever you know, there's a bias that saturates the market, players get saturated in what I call sardine insulation, because there is so the industry loves them. And I think Jordan Love is one of those players now, because he ended on a hot streak, you know, and everybody thought he was, you know, it was the Colin Cowherd, you know, he's terrible. And now all of a sudden he's great. And I think it's a feel good story. So I think he's one of those players. We talked about Tajay Spear Tuesday night being one of those players that the industry seems to really, be very high on right now. Trey McBride for the Cardinals is a tight end that everybody seems to be very high on right now. Those players that have that groupthink saturation, build a level of insurance on that player, especially in January, February, there's a layer of security. And granted, the draft may shake things up, but I think if you're able to, one, either tear down for a bump, or you're able to acquire one of these players that are slathered in groupthink at this time of year, I think you're able to then cash that in and have some security. Whether you want to keep that player rostered or you want to sell out down the road, the value's baked in. And I think that's important. Acquiring players that there really isn't a massive cliff right around the corner.
No, and you hit it on the head there. Like, I get the sardine stuff now. I was messing with you earlier. But you feel it. You see everybody swimming that way. Here's another thing. We talked about on the last show a couple weeks ago. We said you really got to understand your league mates, but you need to know where they get their information from. We mentioned that multiple times. You know what else you need to know? Where they get their information from is the players they're going to like. So, for example, last year we saw a big push for, like, there was a Justin Ross. I don't know if you remember. There was like a Justin Ross space there. Now, whether those were actually transitioning or not over, but there are some people that probably were following that site and they saw, oh, hey, Justin Ross could be that guy. Maybe you got a third for Justin Ross, which he's out of the league now. Like, getting a third for Justin Ross at that point is an excellent move. So there is always like that. Like, I know football guys, there's a big push behind, like, they thought Russell Wilson was a great QB2 in Superflex. And they really went after that. Yeah. And so if you know where your league mates get their information from, and who they follow, even who they follow on, you could get really deep and go follow who they follow on Twitter, who they interact with. You could figure out, like, hey, what players are going to go that way, right? Tajay Spears, McBride, all of those guys, Puka Nacua from last year. Like, there are ways to kind of use, like, just any information works, like any information. And now if you're a market player, you have tons of dynasty leagues, obviously it's a little harder. But if you know where these guys are getting their, or their podcast, they listen to the footballers. All right. Who do the footballers talk about? Okay, now I know exactly where these guys are going to go. That's a little bit of added to that as well. Like, they're going to have insulated value too. And there's also sites that do this. And you'll see it. There's a lot of groupthink with sites. I will say football guys, and I'm not being biased, you know, we really are individuals. Like, we work for a company, but we definitely have different ways of thinking. But when you guys are like, and I know they have group chats with all these different sites, because I'm on the in on that stuff. They talk about the same players in there. And then that transfers out into their content. And you see it. It really kind of grows around that. Use that to your advantage. Go take those guys and then and use that. If they follow those guys and they watch their content, that's where you can get some value at.
Yeah. And I think the last thing I would add as we finish up talking about the spread, the variant spreadsheet, mm-hmm. is that as we're talking about league specifics and who your fellow league managers follow on Twitter and social media and podcasts, there's also, you know, we talked in episode one about managers who like to trade, managers who are volume traders. And we talked about managers who have to win every deal, or they don't even answer, right? They don't, unless it's so lopsided, they're not even going to interact with you. And you can add that, you can incorporate that into this spreadsheet. I didn't do it, but again, league specific, you could go into the wide receiver column, that very first column, and you could color code that. Which managers, you know, if there's a manager that has both Zay Flowers and Drake London, and they're in a really, you know, they're not full on rebuild, and they're very active and they're always trading, highlight those in green. And then that'll help you to know, okay, when you go across and you see the variance, okay, this is a player that's, I have a potential opportunity to either sell or buy, and then go through and look and say, okay, where's my active managers in this league? Who are the ones that I'm going to try to avoid just till, unless it's absolutely necessary, or I'll make a deal, a trade offer, but I won't expect, you know, because when you make offers, and especially if you know it's a good offer, you're expecting a response and you're thinking, I got at least a 50-50 chance of this going through. But when you're dealing with that particular manager, you know, you put it off till the last minute, you make that offer and you're like, okay, I'm going to be lucky if I even get a response on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got to know too, like, I know when to send offers too. Like, mm-hmm. I know when they're active in the chat. Like, I know I see them and I kind of have these on the background there. No, 100%. I think this kind of sheet definitely works that way. You know, I put in the color coding, green loves the trade, you know, red win every deal or no response. Like you just mentioned, profiling the league mates. We're going to say that every time because it's super important to profile your league mates. A lot of people just join a league and then they talk in the chat and then they just make moves just all over the place. It's like lightning strikes. You're just trying to make moves. Profiling will help you extract the value, and you're going to have to find that the way you do it. But this sheet definitely works that way. And I love it. And we can kind of help you with it too, as well. Kind of talked about how to do this. You know, I want to get into an example. So we're going to talk about an example. You can tie this together. So we're going to talk about a player. It's very relevant. I'll take this off so you can see our pretty faces. But, you know, when we're talking about like a player right now that we're, you know, we're getting into kind of this example of variance is who are we talking about?
Yeah. So the player that I think is a perfect example is TJ Hockenson. And obviously I didn't do tight ends on that spreadsheet, but I think he provides a perfect case study of our first two episodes, the very spreadsheet tonight and what we talked about as far as evaluating and profiling managers in your league. And so let's take a look at the current situation, right? Everybody knows Hock is, if healthy, and on the offense that he's in, and guessing that Kirk Cousins potentially comes back, playing that into the equation, you're looking at a, you know, top four tight end, you know, automatically, maybe a little higher. It all depends on how you feel about Trey McBride and how much you're discounting Kelsey and his age. But definitely top four. Yeah. He just had ACL surgery last week, the 29th of January, and the recovery time for the surgery he had is a 9 to 12 weeks. So what, I'm sorry, 9 to 12 months. So what does that look like, right? 9 to 12 months puts 9 months puts him at the end of October. So, that's if everything goes right. And he heals and there's no swelling, there's no complications, puts him in at the end of October. So let's talk about that for a minute. So you have him on your spreadsheet if you're doing it for tight ends. And that's going to change. You're going to have him ranked in a vacuum, but it's going to change your outlook if you're rebuilding or if you're title chasing. If you're rebuilding, you don't have to discount him as much because you're still, you know, a year or two away. And at 26, going to be 27. There's still some value there. Even if you use them as a trading chip next year, there's still value there, right? If you use them as a trading chip in 25, as opposed to, or the end of 24, right? That stretch run. Yeah. Down there. So you're going to rank him differently if you're rebuilding. You're going to rank him lower if you're chasing a title and you don't have tight end depth. Now, if you have three great tight ends, that affects how you might rank him. But if he's your starter and you're counting on him and you're chasing a title, that's going to impact where you rank TJ on your list. Mm-hmm. So that's the layer of context, taking into account the injury, the rehab, what does that look like with him coming back?
Yeah, and I think and that's what you should be doing with a lot of these assets too. Like, and I was telling Leo too. So, you know, looking at a startup that, you know, I'm in right now, you're looking at TJ. I mean, he got drafted by a win now manager as tight end five. Win now manager, they're going after it. Well, they might not have it. Like, when you're looking at just the timeline where it looks like, you know, November, maybe he comes back ready to go. They haven't drafted a tight end two yet in that league. But you need to know, like, hey, I mean, yeah, he was a top five tight end last year. And if he's healthy, yeah, we're going to go into it that way. But understanding his variance and where you're at really matters. Now, I would also say, too, if you are going like that productive struggle type route in like a startup, he's a perfect target to go get. Because he's 26, going to be 27. You still have him probably for 2025 when you're looking at like in 2 years. And then back into this round, depending on how you build, maybe you can plug him in there. You have that productive struggle team where, hey, you're building up, you have your picks. He's a perfect target for that because you're not tanking. You just say, hey, we're going to struggle here. I'll grab one of these back end tight ends, Schultz or someone like that, to kind of plug in and play. And then he comes back. It doesn't mean I have to play him. I can now move him. I can shop him in November. Right. Before. Hopefully your league has no trade deadline. We won't get into that because I make people mad. But, you know, you can move them. You can do those type of things. Like, that is the perfect variance. Like, you're always looking for guys like that. Like, I would, like, if I'm going to start up, I'm definitely looking at, like, productive struggle the first year if I'm going to do that. I'm going to target guys like Hawkinson, guys that are coming off that injury, you know, guys that are kind of a little bit late in the game. Even, like, veterans. Devontae Adams going to eighth or ninth round. Sure, I'll take him now. And I know I'm going to just probably shop him at some point. So there's definitely variance in terms of what you can move them for. But I absolutely love the Hawkinson deal there and kind of how to do that and understanding kind of how your league would perceive him.
Right. And so you've got them now, you've got them mapped out on your variant spreadsheet. You know whether you want to make him a target or how you want to approach him based on rebuilding or title chasing. Then you factor in what we talked about to wrap up the spreadsheet segment or last week. What about the manager that has him rostered? What does that manager's roster look like? And is that a manager, somebody that's an active trader that, especially if they've already built a tendency? I mean, I've played with certain managers that like clockwork. You know, they would, you know, as they got into August, they were looking for that perfect starting lineup. They might not have been looking for it in February, but get to August and all they're worried about is, do they have a plug and play? And if Hawk is on their roster and he was their plug and play, again, you don't have to pull the trigger right now. And actually the opportunity may not be right now, but with Dynasty, again, as we talk about different windows, we talk about preparation. We talk about understanding your league mates. You know that if the guy that's got or the person that's got Hawkinson is a perfect lineup in August, well, you notate that and you know to go knocking on that door. Maybe you won't get that deal done in February, but you'll get that deal done as you start to near Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, I think the other thing too, as we talked about, like when you look at your dynasty managers and knowing that, and I know I talked about it beforehand where, you know, I said, hey, you know, don't ever fill your rosters now. There are some guys that do. And knowing those guys that do are another way you can be like, oh, I know he's sitting there seeing Hawkinson just had surgery. I bet you if my middling tight end that I have in my roster, he'll pay for him right now because he's thinking, oh, my gosh, I need to add and plug someone in right now and I can use it. So you could use that to your advantage, too. Understanding that, like, there's always guys in my leagues. I call them the perfect guy, like the type A personalities. Yep. Hey, I need to fill it because they get stressed out about it. So, like, if you know that he's looking at Hawkinson, he's going to be out, you do those things, this is a perfect opportunity to, like, hey, I have this kind of middle tier tight end. I bet you I can go get more value for just this guy because he has Hawkinson on his roster. You don't even need to trade for Hawkinson. You can actually trade your middle tier guy to go get him. There's little nuances that you can kind of use and utilize for those league mates.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll add is that, you know, just because that spreadsheet is framed out that way, depending on your league, you can make it however you want. Like, let's say you play in a league where 10 out of the 12 owners or managers are very risk averse. They don't, you know, they don't like digesting risk at all. And you know that about them. And you don't mind risk, right? When I was managing, you know, when I had 30 plus dynasty leagues, one of the best ways to buy variance in my favor was to take guys that had risk baked into their outcome. And I would, you know what, I felt I was an active enough trader, and the leagues were active enough that if I made a bad move and I invested on the wrong side of the risk, I would figure out a way to pull myself out of that hole. But again, the point being is that you could make a spreadsheet instead of having a column for rebuilding and a column for title chasing. You could have a column for risk averse, and you could plug in everybody based on how solid are they? What's the risk? Are they a free agent? Well, maybe I better drop them down because I know the folks in my league hate banking on a player that's potentially going to be on a new team, or I hate banking on a player that's, you know, gets a WI and gets pulled over for drunk driving in March during March Madness. I know they're going to react to that. All of those, that's all vital information. And again, you can have a column for that based on your league, if they're all risk or if they all love buying risk and you're the only one who doesn't, you can make a column for that. So you can really build this for a specific league, if you know the predominant or the majority of the managers are a certain type.
Yeah. And I was still getting this. Now, if you're watching, drop your trades. We're going to talk through some trades. So if you want to kind of drop them into the chat, as we go, me and Leo kind of will dive into it. Just provide as much context as you can, as we get into it, just say, hey, 12 team, you know, what are you looking at premium and those type of things. But I do want to mention, when we're talking about variance and we're talking about what Leo just mentioned, I still think that there's value to go buy running backs right now. I still think that I'm going to harp on this. I think you can go get guys that I think it can increase in value. We did mention this. We talked about, like, you know, the 202, 203 for Tyjae Spears. We were talking about on the podcast, and I was mentioned, like, hey, yeah, I'm okay paying that, because I think Spears' value is going to go up to where he's probably worth a late first at some point. And I still think that there's ways to kind of go target it. If you go target those, you know, those running backs right now, I think that there is the other thing that is hard to kind of quantify on those, like, spreadsheets is the way dynasty managers think too. Like, you talked about the sardine effect. I think there's still the sardine, like, insulated players, but, or almost like the mindset of, like, the sardine mindset, running backs are bad, right? They're just swimming in this thing where running backs are bad. And I still think that there is definitely areas that you can go target at the running back position. Like, I was just going through, like, combined rankings the other day, looking at the running backs and where they're at. I mean, you're basically in startups right now. I think maybe four running backs going in the first five rounds. That's how different it's got. I mean, when Leo first started fantasy, 12 running backs are going to the first round, right? Like, that's what it is. So I do think that with the way people are kind of looking at it, you know, there's so many, like, veterans that you can go grab. I think, you know, Najee Harris is so cheap right now because they think the wheels have fallen off. You know, now when you're looking at, you know, the new offensive coordinator, we can say what we want about Arthur Smith, but there's the opportunity there. Even guys like Aaron Jones, he those type of guys going to, like, running back 30 to 40 range, there's variance there to go buy them and really extract some value.
And I think what even, you know, expounds upon that particular strategy is the fact that the draft class is weak. You know, the consensus is that this incoming draft class isn't that strong at running back. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, the top running backs, top rookie running backs getting drafted at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round in rookie drafts.
Yeah.
That value, that 2-1, that 2-2, you're better off investing that into one of these mm-hmm. veteran running backs that has a 2-year shelf life on them that you can utilize. So I think if we had a draft class that was flipped, like, this was so deep at wide receiver, and we're splitting hairs over, you know, the wide receiver 2 to the wide receiver 6. I mean, this is a nice class for wide receiver. So if this was flipped and we had 6 or 7 running back prospects that, you know, could come in and totally upset depth charts across the entire NFL, I think it would be different. I think you would need to pump the brakes a little bit, and unless you really love the aspects and the skills of a particular middle range running back, you were really high on them. But otherwise, I think you would pump the brakes. But I think this is the perfect storm to implement the strategy you're talking about. Weak draft class, turn those draft picks into a value add for your roster at a running back position.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think that I'm one of those guys that like to swim against the grain a little bit sometimes. I like to go by, and I'm definitely, I am not risk adverse. Like, and if I fall on my face, I fall on my face. You're talking about a guy that traded a first for Josh Rosen at a point. Like, I will go after it. I will go kind of target those guys. But I think adding that variance sheet, and then also you got to be a volume trader if you're going to do that, though. Like, you can't miss and then be like, oh, I'm terrible at this, I'm not going to trade anymore. You got to dig yourself out. Like, you're going to have to dig yourself out of those holes a little bit. We do have some trade questions. So if you want to drop some trades, we're going to get into it.
And Kevin, just to say, we talked last week about, you know, tracking your strategies and being able to make up for it if you make a mistake. And again, I think this leads exactly into that, where these running backs that you're talking about aren't so overpriced that if you make the mistake, the strategy's sound. But if you make the mistake on the wrong player, the price point isn't so out of whack that you can't fix it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not paying for a top tier player that you've already broken the bank to get. So the strategy is good. You implement the strategy. You just happen to execute it with the wrong player.
Yeah.
Well, you're still going to be able to fix that because the price point still is low enough.
Yeah, and that's also too, because I'm not going to buy too high up in a tier on a guy that I'm like, eh, I'm a little risky right, here. Right. Like, I'm not going to go too high. I'm going to be like, all right, where's my middle ground where I'm okay? Like, if I'm giving up a mid to late second, if I still have my first, I'm much more risk adverse there. I'm like, all right, well, I still have a first here. I'm very active in, like, if I don't have a trade deadline, I am still very active. I'm just giving up seconds and thirds. I don't tend to give up my first unless my roster is just clearly like, I'm like, ah, I can do that, because I still can move that. And then when I have a first, like a mid to late first, I do like, I'll trade back. I'll go straight up, just trade back, collect some more assets in the second if I need to. Like, I don't have to use that first. It just gives me more leverage, because my whole thing is about leverage. How much leverage can I have over those guys? And I think you make a great point there. All right, Sean, appreciate you. You always hang out in here, and you always, you know, every live show we ever do on this channel. 12 team super flex, you start 10 PPR tight end premium lineup there. So Brian Robinson, perfect. So we're gonna talk about a running back. So Brian Robinson or the 206. And now Robinson doesn't have a new offensive coordinator yet. Looks like he got Dan Quinn. There's some rumblings about Chip Kelly at the time of recording this. This is a fun one. I like this one. So Brian Robinson's been sneaky good. Brian Robinson's been a very pluggable and play asset there. New coaching staff, though. So what are we thinking here, Leo?
I think it really comes down to that particular league. Again, I say everything with context. That particular league and how they value draft picks. So I think if there's a feeding frenzy every April for draft picks, and there's a history of draft picks becoming high, you know, in value, adding percentage points, and you're able to cash in, that makes this more complicated. In a vacuum, not knowing anything about his league, I'll take Robinson over the 2-6 with this draft class.
Yeah.
I would rather have that running back, because I do think if they move on from anything, it'll be Gibson, and I don't think they will. They'll bring somebody in, but I don't think it'll be such a huge thief to his carries, to his usage in the offense. I'd rather have Robinson in a vacuum. But again, the caveat to this is, if the history is draft picks really explode in value in April, you may lean into keeping the draft pick just for that reason.
If you are a contender, if you're like a middle to contender area, Brian Robinson, I think, has a pretty safe floor next year. Like, you're looking at this as, I'm a plug and play him. I think that he can be a very solid running back two option, where I think that he's going to get volume. I also think Quinn knows when he comes in, he's going to kind of lean on probably this running back room, and definitely, like, you know, they're going to have a rookie quarterback. That's context too. Like, how much are they going to be willing to throw it early on? Will they see more volume there from Robinson there? Gibson's probably gone for sure. Chris Rodriguez is fine, but he's basically Brian Robinson. Like, they're the same guy. And I think Brian has shown kind of that trust there. And you've seen, and I think that, you know, he's seen him play against, you know, Dallas. You saw the targets last year too, were pretty good for Robinson. So I would lean Robinson here. But to your point, yes, if 206 is doing this, we don't know where those tiers are going to be in the second round right now. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess, you know, 204, 203, based on the rookie mocks that I do every-ish day. It depends on how much time I have. That's kind of where it's going. But again, that's just a crapshoot at this point. No one really knows. They're just picking guys that they like.
And the only other thing I'd add is it would also depends to me what his quarterback situation is, because that 2-6 might put him in the range for Knicks or JJ McCarthy somewhere in that range. So if he needs that, you know, rookie quarterback to step in and bolster his lineup, the 2-6 has a little bit more value in that instance. But if he set a quarterback, then Robinson is the way I would go.
Yeah, I mean, and you could always, like, depending on what it is, like, if you can give a third and an asset that's kind of like a wide receiver or something like that, I'd always start there before I just offer the two. And then you just see kind of what he'll go for and where he'll go there. All right, next one there. I just traded a 107 for 110 and Keenan Allen and one quarterback half PPR. So you tiered back a little bit. And one quarterback, I don't mind that deal at all, because I think as you get into like the late first, especially with the running back position, I don't see a ton of value there. It really depends where Caleb and Drake going to get drafted, probably at the quarterback positions. They'll see where that 107 is going to be. I think Keenan Allen's a very good target for a contender. And I don't mind this. You kept you got a first round pick back. It's not like, you know, you had to trade that away. So I like that side.
Yeah, I do as well. It fits right to the strategy you talked about earlier about tearing down and getting a bump. And that's really what I don't think with the debate that's going on over certain wide receivers and where do they fall, and we don't know the context of where they're going to land yet. 110 may turn out to be as good a player as 1-7.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, just for context right now, for one quarterback, I mean, it's Marvin, Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Brock Bowers. After that, it's pretty much pick whoever you like. 104 to 107, Dunze, Franklin. If you want one of the running backs, probably not. Caleb probably falls in there if you believe Caleb can be that QB1 type. So like 107 to 110, that is really the same tier. To me, that would be, and you're getting Keenan Allen back. Yeah, that absolutely, I think you smashed that deal. I love that deal there. Now, if you have any more, drop them in the comments as we get into it. We will talk about trades too. Like if we have a little extra time, we can talk about trade strategies, ways that I'm doing. I can mention some of the trades that I've been kind of putting out there. Dave, appreciate you hopping in. 12-team Superflex PPR, 0.75 tight end premium, but no actual tight end slot. Oh, all right. So you don't have to play a tight end. Start 10. I traded away Jaylen Warren plus Njoku for Cup and a 24 third. Interesting. So you don't have to play a tight end. I've been in leagues like this. They don't last very long. So I'm glad this league is hanging out there. But I guess the premium kind of bumps it up. I do like Njoku this year. This is close to me. I'm not a big Jaylen Warren guy though. So that's why I probably would lean Cup, because I do think Harris is there. I don't mind. I think it's hard to play Warren week in and week out without a Harris injury there. I'd probably lean Cup on this. I like that you got a pick back, as long as Cup comes back healthy next year.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It is very owner preference, right? Yeah. On this, if it was no tight end premium at all, then I would lean heavily into the Cup side. But I like the 0.75 tight end premium, and Njoku, you know. I'm just not a Watson fan either. So I think if Flacco was coming back next year, I think I'd like the Njoku side, but I'm not really sure what we're going to get. I know you were talking about buying Watson at his current value. I'm not such a big fan, but you know what? I guess I think I would have liked it a lot more if I was getting back, even if a 24 second would have made it a no brainer for the Cup side, but it's just hard to tell what Nakua's that, you know, what that chair is going to be next year. Yeah. You know, as they split up those receptions, I think it's really a toss up little bit to the Cup side, but obviously if Warren comes out like a man on fire next year, you're going to regret having made that move. But right now in February, slight edge to the Cup side.
Yeah, I think the Cup value here is that you like I don't want to say pre Nakua, but probably pre injury Cup value. Because when I look at this, Warren's probably worth a second, not a third. So if you're going to like give up, if you're going to get Cup back, you're looking at Cup being a top 12 wide receiver. So if he does that, okay, you're perfect. That's how it kind of looks on this way there. But yeah, that's kind of how I look at that. All right, 1-8 and 2-4 for 1-6 Superflex tight end premium. So I think that if you need to get it up into that 1-6 tier, which I believe is still a first tier, Jaden Daniels could be around there. Roma Dunze, you know, Bowers, you know, maybe Malik Nabers dips there depending where it's at. Drake May, depending where you're at. I don't mind giving up a mid second to tier up if you have a if you're looking at that QB position and those three guys are going to maybe one of them will fall there. Really league dependent though. Depends on who's in the front of you, where are the positions they're looking at. But I still think at the 106, you could use the 106 when the draft comes and probably get more value out of that. So I like the 106. But I think this is a fair, it's fair to kind of, you have to give up a mid second to move up to two spots.
Yeah, I agree. I think if this was a one quarterback league, then I would definitely like the two pick side. Yeah. But since we're talking super flex and we're talking about two of them, potentially three of them being in that range, then I definitely think moving up to the 1-6 was worth that cost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you gotta pay up. No one's going to move back two spots, especially with the tier, without paying up a little bit there. I want to mention this, that one episode will be roster construction. Yeah, we'll probably dive into that. We're going to be diving into all kinds of different topics as we go. Now, I'm going to put this one up, but I got this in my DMs today, and I wasn't able to answer it, so I figured, what the heck? He said he was watching, so we'll answer on this. So I got an offer in a Superflex 12-team dynasty. I won the league last year. I give up Lawrence and Swift. I receive Goff, Shakir, the 202, and the 211. So he's going to get back Goff, Shakir, 202, 211. My other quarterback is Hurts, and my other running back are James Cook, Ramondre, James Conner, Zach Moss, and Roschon Johnson. So the way I look at this is I value Lawrence higher than this. So like, I don't think Lawrence, I think where he's getting value right now is not necessarily where I expect him to be next year. So I wouldn't give up Lawrence and Swift to this because I don't want to tear down to Goff that much. I know Johnson's coming back, but like the seconds, I'm really not interested in Shakir, to be honest with you, because I think they're going to add to that room. I don't know what he is outside of wide receiver 3-4. 2 seconds for Swift, I guess that's not terrible value. But I do think Swift's a pretty good runner there. I think this just hinges on who do I trust more between Lawrence and Goff, and it's Lawrence to me in Dynasty.
Yeah, I guess if I was breaking this down, and a lot of times what I'll do is when I get an offer like this, is I'll just do a scale and I'll try to pair up what I think value-wise just to get an idea. Some people, and we need to circle back to this on the value spreadsheet, the variance spreadsheet, you can add a column for total value. You know, we talked about the trade pass cut. I mean, what I always want to call it, punt pass
keep trade cut. Yeah, keep trade cut.
Yes. So they list a value, like an overall value for each player. So you can add that in. Again, that changes so frequently, but that can give you an idea if you want to do 2-for-1. It's almost like you can build in a trade calculator into that spreadsheet. And that's what I would kind of do here. And I think, to me, Lawrence, I like a little bit more than I like Goff and the 2-2. And Swift, I like more than Shakir and the 2-11. So if I was going to have a value side, it would be Lawrence and Swift over Goff, Shakir, and the 2 picks.
Yeah, I think actually I want to talk about it anyway, because I was going to ask you, like, the way when you get trades like this with that many pieces, like you mentioned, I like breaking them up in tiers and like having like, all right, so who gets value where? So I look at it as Lawrence to Goff. Okay, Goff to 11. Okay, now I'm looking at the 202 and Shakir for Swift. No, I'm going to lean Swift side here. So if I have both those pieces are already getting value more, I'm going to lean that side. That's how I do the big trades like that. And that's kind of how I kind of, like, my mind works too. Like, because what will happen, and Leo knows this, on Dynasty trade calculators out there, if you just keep throwing like fourths and thirds, the value goes, and that's how people do it. Like, you'll get like all these nickel pieces for these quarters. You're like, what the hell is what trade calculator are you using out there? So it's hard to kind of, you know, quantify all of those pieces sometimes. So I like to break it down based on the assets. And I have like a mind trade calculator. I know it sounds crazy, but it's like, all right, I know where I value this guy and I'm going to tip it a little bit more than an average trade calculator has taken all of these, like keep trade cut and all these things to account. Like I know where I lean, and usually your first initial thought is the way to go. Like usually it's like, you remember how they used to tell you, like, don't change your answer on multiple choice. That's a real thing for the most part. It's like, oh, I know where I'm at. I know where I'm leaning here. This is where I should stay.
Right. And I think the way you do it, the strategy you use and a method that you use can also be used to create trade offers. So the same way you piece and tier and basically, like I said, for me, it's a scale, right? You do it in your head. I do it on paper. I'm old. I get a piece of paper out and, you know, I draw, you know, a line down the middle and I put, okay, one side is this, the other side is that. I still like the left side more than the right. I mean, I just pair it off, and that's how I ultimately, but that's the same as what I was talking about is with the spreadsheet. I'm basically applying a value to each thing. And I'm trying to see, is there any way that this adds up? Is there any way that this is equal? And a lot of times, you know, there isn't, or that gives you the counter. Okay. It's close, but it's still off a second. Or it's still off a mid-range wide receiver, or it's still off, and that allows you to construct the deal the way that you think is fair, or negotiate, or send a counter back, or however you want to do it. But yes, absolutely. Your method, my method is the same. You're just smarter, and you do it in your head, and I have to write it down.
I got too much shit going on, Leo. I can't sit down and like, hey, I got doing this. I got to just try to do it in my head. Now, if you have any trades, drop them. We have a few more minutes. You can answer any trade questions or values. You want to throw a player out there, we can talk about values, because I am going to ask Leo a question about kind of valuing different positions. Like in Superflex, when you're looking at quarterbacks, so like right now, when I was looking at the last kind of rankings that I was kind of going through with quarterbacks, you know, there is definitely a tier. Like, is there at what point does a player, like, I don't want to say a player is ever untradeable, but like Allen and Mahomes and Stroud tend to be the top three guys right now in kind of super flex area, you know, and I get a lot of questions asking me about moving back or moving up from those guys. Are they untradeable, or like, what do you need back to like flip one of those guys, like the big type asset guys?
You're going to get tired of hearing this, but it really is.
I know it depends. It depends.
It really is league dependent, right? Because I'm not a huge super flex guy, right? But that was kind of later in my dynasty career. And most of my leagues that I was already established in were one quarterback leagues. And I made a decision, you know, 6 years ago, not to add more leagues because I knew I was trending, you know, scaling back. So I don't have a ton of super flex experience, but I've watched a lot of leagues that are super flex. Yeah. And what I've seen is that people, it's kind of like, you can have my quarterback from my cold, dead hands. You know, there's really not a lot of movement, especially from the upper tier. That factors in, right? Because I don't want to move one of the, unless it's a windfall. I think every player is tradable. I really just think, what does it take to get you off your comfort zone when you're talking about a tiered player that's in the higher echelon? What is it to get you off your comfort zone? Because there's a level of comfort that comes with having one of those two, three guys on your roster. There is a level of feeling like you are just in control and you've got a long runway and you really are plug and play and you've got nothing to worry about. So you talk about trading down for a tier four additional assets. I'm fine with that. In any position, any player, it's just, are you comfortable moving off that spot with what you're getting back? Those players, I would never move off unless I'm overwhelmed by what I'm getting back.
Yeah, and I think also you have to look at it from like a fantasy perspective too. Like, there's risk involved. Like Anthony Richardson is a perfect example of risk involved. Like, but if he hits a ceiling, he's a top five guy. You move back a little bit for a guy like Stroud, because I've been seeing a lot of people talk about Stroud and Richardson, who has the highest ceiling. The answer is Anthony Richardson. Stroud is amazing. Stroud's a great player. But from fantasy and rushing standpoints, it's Anthony Richardson. So if you feel comfortable enough moving from Stroud to Richardson with a ton of probably a couple first or at least one first or something like that back, then you could do that deal. It's just, you know, are you willing to take the risk that he's going to stay healthy?
You can do that deal, Kevin, as long as people in that league don't have a problem trading quarterbacks, so that you can bounce back. Again, we talk about that all the time. The strategy is good. You just executed it with the wrong player. If you can jump back in and fix that, but if you're in a league that rarely moves quarterbacks and you happen to make that decision to go from Stroud to Richardson and it doesn't pan out, you're probably not getting back into that stratosphere until you have a draft pick in the top four.
Yeah. Yeah, or else you're trading for Baker Mayfield like I had to do this year. I had to trade for Baker. Yeah. That was the reality of the league there. Now, I have a couple other questions here. What would you need on top of the 108 for A.J. Brown? So trading, I guess, for A.J., 108 probably doesn't – I mean, I would say A.J. Brown, like 106 is his value right now, and it's outside the tier of the 107 in Superflex. So what do you want back for that? I mean – I don't know, maybe like a Christian Kirk type player or something like that. I mean, it depends on if you're rebuilding or not, that variance of like, are you contending? Are you going for it? Because if I'm contending, I'm probably keeping AJ Brown.
Yeah.
So he's
moving AJ Brown and he wants to know what to ask back on top of the 1-8. Is that how we're reading that?
Or he wants to take AJ Brown and he's asking if he has the 108
to add to
what
it.
What would you add to it?
Yeah. I guess if I'm buying AJ Brown and I'm trying to figure out what I need to, so what I would do is I would probably do the 1-8 and maybe a 24 first for AJ Brown in a second this year coming back, an early second coming back this year, maybe. And if it's, and if it's vice versa, if I'm moving AJ Brown and I'm getting back to 1-8, then I'm moving AJ Brown in a second this year for the 1-8 and a first in 24.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair value. If you're looking at player value, like if I'm contending and I have AJ Brown, but I'm like, hey, I kind of want to like maybe just get out of that and see if I can get younger. Look for guys that maybe kind of disappointed a little bit, or you know, that definitely that high ceiling, like Davante Adams, like just that type of like, hey, can I go get like a high ceiling veteran guy there? I want to get to this question because I missed it. Now he's giving me shit in the chat. Can I flip Marvin Mims plus Trey Palmer for Jerry Jeudy in a 12-10 PPR? So maybe I think you could. I think it depends on what kind of like truther they are. So if they love Marvin Mims coming out and they believe that they can be that, I like Trey Palmer. He definitely doesn't move the needle too much for me for Jeudy in this kind of a deal here. It probably comes down to Mims and like what they believe pre-draft process there. Jeudy is just the unlike, I don't know, because I think the guy that's holding Jeudy probably loves Jeudy. I think the guy that's holding Jeudy is probably like, no, I've had him on my roster for 3 years waiting for a breakout. So I guess that could work both ways. Maybe they want to just get off of it and then move on and re-roll with Mims and Palmer. I think it's a – I think you send it because I think I'd rather have try to take the Jerry Jeudy and just hope that he goes to a new team or whatever happens there. I'd send it. I don't know if he'd accept it, though.
Yeah, I think in order to get this done, more than likely it's going to be Mims, Palmer, and maybe a late second for Jeudy and a third coming back.
Yeah,
is what I think. I think that's the juice that might get this done, is you adding a second to the Palmer side and taking a third back on the Jeudy side. I think that might level the equation out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. And that's another thing too. Do you like sitting back? Like, do you like, if I'm going to give up a second, do you like trying to collect some type of third back as you kind of like
absolutely maneuver? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, because two seconds become a first, two thirds become a second. Yeah. I think the most important thing in Dynasty in the offseason to me is that you're draft active, and you can't be draft active unless you have capital, you know, in the kitty. You have to have cookies in the cookie jar in order to be draft active. You want to be able to trade into the next year. You want to be able to move up. You don't know how the draft's going to play out. You need to have chips available for you to move. So anytime you can get those extra one, you know, those extra draft picks, even if they're third, I played in a couple dynasty leagues that went like six rounds in rookie drafts. So you had, you know, even if you got two fifths, by the time that draft rolled around, two future fifths, by the time that draft rolled around, I'd worked them into a third. So it, you know, that was vital to be able to move at draft time.
Yeah. And I would say the three most active times in your dynasty league's history, the startup draft, any rookie draft, and then like a deadline, trade deadline, or playoffs, like somewhere in that range where you're getting there. So you want to have as many, you know, bullets in the chamber as you possibly can. Just so you can send them.
And I think most managers break the season into quarters. So I think that's the other window to watch. I think week 4 to 5, 8 to 9, especially the ones that have deadlines. And I think majority of the leagues, it's trending more to not having deadlines, but I think a lot of the existing dynasty leagues had deadlines. And so I think that quarter, when you break it into, you know, 3 to 4 game stretches, that those windows open up as well.
Yeah. All right. Last one here. We appreciate you guys tuning in today. It's been fun. How do you feel about a chain's value? I get a lot of offers, interest for him. I have JT and Javonte too. So having JT and Javonte helps. I will say Javonte's value has dipped, probably the lowest I've ever seen it in Dynasty, just based on the startups that I've looked at and some of the ADP. A chain sitting there that like probably running back 6 to 9 range where you like him, but I think there's worry. But I think with the chain, you have that insulated. People are all thinking the same thing about him. They're scared of him getting injured or being too small. So I think that's where you're going to struggle getting top dollar for a chain, because there's always that built-in like trepidation that he's going to get injured.
Yeah. Well, he's saying he gets a lot of offers and has a lot of interest in him. For me, I mean, he's one of those players that is really nice to have on your roster because of the ceiling factor week to week. But you're right. There's risk baked in. I think honestly, since he has some depth already built up on that roster, you know, I would lean into listening to the offers and if they're solid value, enough to make him move. I think I definitely would. It's not like he's untouchable. That right offer comes in and I'm definitely, if I'm getting a solid player back in a potential future first, then I'm definitely pulling the trigger on that and moving him. I'm not tied to him.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. And I think he's just one of those guys where, you know, again, I'm going to keep repeating this where the running backs that I'm okay having on my roster, JT, CMC, Breece Hall, Gibbs, Robinson. After that, I'm totally okay moving off some of these guys and just playing it by ear in terms of value, where those guys are at. Like, if you're getting offers, like you having JT and Javonte, to me, JT's top five, okay. Javonte could have that bounce back year, especially after 1 year removed from the injury. Okay, I have him. Hey, if I can go get a wide receiver and that's in a tier two area for a Chan or a rookie pick where I'm going to get a top seven guy, like I wouldn't mind moving off of that either. Like, I think that there is good value there. And I do want to bring up this. There's nothing worse than owning rookies that did nothing. He's talking about Marvin Mims. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Luckily, you probably didn't have to pay too much up for Mims. Like, Quentin Johnson managers out there, like, you're hoping you play in a league that has points per pancake, because he's going to be blocking the shit out of Harbaugh's offense. I'm going to tell you guys right now, as someone who watched Michigan play all my life in Harbaugh, like, that was a big miss. And I think that's one of those things it's tough to come back from sometimes when you're spending, you know, 108, 107, 109 capital on those guys. But, you know, understanding like this, we talked about it last week too, understanding the, like, when is those windows, those value swings will come. All you need is a couple good games. Like, someone asked me about Bryce Young recently and they said, hey, should I move Bryce Young for the 202? And I said, no, absolutely not. Because with the new offense, with Canelli's there, if he has just a couple good games at the beginning of the year next year, he's worth a late first right there.
And I think that's something that, you know, all the players should be paying it. All the managers should be paying attention to right now is that, you know, certain players end the season on a negative note. Like, think about the Eagles for a second. You know, they disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
The values kind of dip a little bit. But the bottom line is I love what they did with that coaching staff. Right. So they're going to go into next season with some established coordinators and they'll be able to build continuity off of that, where they had been pillaged from a, you know, coordinator standpoint, coaching standpoint heading into this year, and it showed. And so I think that, you know, the folks need to be paying attention to that as these coaches settle, offensive coordinators, line coaches. You don't have an, you know, 100% certainty what this is going to look like, but the bottom line is it's going to, sorry, I'm just watching my cat climb across. The bottom line is it's going to have an impact. I don't mind guessing now what that impact is going to be and making moves based on it. You know, again, if it ends up being wrong, it ends up being wrong. You can bounce back from that. But I like what the Eagles are doing. And that, to me, increases an A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith or Swift, or because I think they're going to be very, you know, I think they're going to do well next year with the new coaching staff.
Yeah, and you're looking at, like, also real quick, just a bit piggyback on that, and then we'll get out of here before this cat attacks Leo over here. Jalen Hurts, you know, right now he's getting valued lower than he's ever been. Also, like, there's a video of him, like, really doing terrible in the accuracy contest at the Pro Bowl or something going around. that stuff matters. Watch it. People are going to be building that up and talking about it as we go. And then, all right, yeah, thanks, Brian. We'll leave on this note. Man, someone give Kevin a trade with a name he can't pronounce. No, we did well tonight. There was no names I couldn't pronounce. Bryce, easy, Ken, all those other areas. So we'll be diving in next week, or not in 2 weeks, excuse me, Thursday night, jumping in, talking about kind of different theories, and we hope this helps. Look at that variance chart. If you have any questions, reach out to us. He is at @Siga_FF on X. I'm at @TheBoys_22. But if you have any questions about building the spreadsheet, do not ask me. I have no idea.
No, I have no problem helping anybody that that has any questions about it. Happy to help.
All right. Well, you heard it there. You heard it from the man himself. All right. We appreciate you guys tuning in, all the love and support we got from our first episode. Hopefully this is helping you guys and you guys are really enjoying it. So thank you. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.